Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel.
Here's Cortinel. He scores! Cortinel's
feeding it! Each week they unleash their raw, stripped-down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
Well, we're off and running. Okay, there's no heads up here. Go ahead, Rusty. Did you already crack your claw?
Yeah. I'm so happy it's 4 o'clock today, so we can start drinking.
Yeah, because you always wait till 4 o'clock, that's for sure. Yeah, you wouldn't have one before four, ever.
No.
Cheers, Budgie.
Got the kokanee going.
Got the kokanee and I got the white claw.
Oh, there we go. You know, what a way to kick off the show again. It's heartwarming. You know, it really is. You know what? You're going to see Cortinel. Hi again, everybody. That was Russ Cortinel. Okay. And I'm Jungle Jim Jerome coming at you with another episode of a riveting episode of The Suspendables. We've been doing it now, Russ. I don't know. We're
a couple of years.
A couple of years. We're 120, 30 shows in.
Just come on. Still. While you're on the subject, tell everybody our email address.
Hurry. There's a problem here, Doug. Well, I'll introduce our guest in a second. I've got a very short attention span, Dan. Or Doug, whatever your name is. Okay.
Doug. Yeah, Dan, whatever.
Our favorite shows are when we have guests. And this week, Rusty said, we got to get him on. Doug Bodger. Welcome to the program. This must be a huge day for you, Doug, to be on this show.
Huh? Yeah, what an honor, I tell you. I've been trying to get on this show for years, and nobody called me. I'm just sitting here doing nothing, waiting for a call.
Yeah. Well, we found you. Where are you, Doug? Of course, I know all this off the top of my head, Doug.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
I would never have had to look at Wikipedia or anything for this.
Bullshit.
Of course, the outstanding junior career. Russ has talked about you before on the show without you knowing it. And then the big. No. It's all sort of good. Yeah. We might have to get you to clarify a few facts.
Yeah.
But of course, you got drafted with Mario. When you got drafted, did you go to Mario right away and go, now you look for me steaming up the left side, okay? And you feed that to me, okay? Because I'm going to tuck a few away.
I thought about it, but. He left right away. He really wasn't interested in the draft. He wanted to go golfing. Then they wouldn't pay him $200,000 a year. So he said, I'm not going to the table. So I was the first guy.
Wow, really?
Yeah, they said, no. Really? Holding out. Not even going to go down and shake hands with the team. So,
Baji, tell everybody about that. Mario was that they weren't going to pay him
$200,000.
What he wanted?
He wanted really? $200,000 for 3 years. He wanted $600,000. They said, no way. You haven't proven yourself in a league yet.
Oh my
Isn't
God.
That something?
So he refused to go to the table because of contract negotiation. So I got to be the first guy at the table, which is really nice.
Oh, that's cool.
Who else was picked in that round with you? Wasn't there three players?
There was, yeah. Do you want me to get the photo?
Yeah. No. No photo.
Oh, yeah. We gotta see. We're doing video now. Yeah, we're doing video, Rusty. So photos work.
I don't know if you probably don't remember him. There's the other guy. Can you see that?
Okay, let's see. Tilt away there.
Tilt, there you go. Yeah. Okay. Mario, who's 24? Is that, hang on.
Rolanger.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So there was always a good trivia thing about that. This is the superstar, the average guy, and the guy that didn't do anything.
Baji, that's not true. You were a star.
Average.
Yeah, no, you were a star. You were a great player, and you had the big power play in Buffalo.
Yeah, that was pretty good power play.
Oh my God, what a great power play! Until you played against us in Montreal, and then we shut you down.
Carbonell, we just blocked shots all over the place. Yeah,
there's always an end to these stories about Doug, and they always have to do with Russ. Well, I guess a couple of questions, a two-parter, Doug.
Yeah.
How did you get to know Russ? And why would you ever want to get to know him?
It's funny because we live in Vancouver Island, both of us growing up, and we never really knew each other.
No. Nope.
And I always used to chase Russ around all the time because he was so fast and I couldn't catch him. So they had the big Victoria team, and we're the small town Couchy Valley team here. So they always beat us all the time, of course. But yeah, so we always played against each other. And then Buffalo, Montreal, we were always playing against each other, and we used to go at it again there. And then finally, we got to play together in LA in our last farewell tour year. So that's how we got to be pretty close. It's pretty funny. It took all that time.
We did call it the farewell tour.
It was.
I said, but I was pissed off because frickin' Bodgy signed with the Canucks. And next year, he totally broke the relationship.
I didn't want to play.
But I'm like, I was so pissed off that he signed because we had the funnest year. And yeah. we called it the farewell tour. And I'll let Bodgy tell some stories. But I remember reading he signed with the Canucks. I'm like, fuck. It was like he broke up with me.
Well, can you blame him? Jesus. I'm surprised the guy lasted as long as he did.
And then they offered it to me. I had to take it. I guess. Vancouver. Yeah. I just tried to get my furniture closer to home. I played 15 games.
What sort of horseshit did you guys get up to when you were, I mean, there, it's got to be.
Where do we start?
At the beginning. Okay. At the beginning. Yeah.
Go ahead. No time limit. You go ahead and I'll tell a story after you tell it.
Some of the best ones were, okay, where are we going? We're flying. And Russ is going, where are we going? Dallas. Oh, happy hour here. We're going for dinner here. And I know a great jazz club afterwards. Okay. So I'm game. Let's go. But I think every city was, where are we going now? Where are we going now? Yeah. Oh, I know a great spot we're headed to. So we wouldn't spend much time in the hotel. We didn't really get to know our roommates very well.
Our bags did.
Yeah, we were sleeping when we got home. So, it was pretty fun. And I don't know how that started. I played with Charlie Huddy his last year in Buffalo. And he said, I said, Charlie, what are you doing? He goes, I'm on my farewell tour. I go, what's that? He goes, I'm gonna eat chicken wings in every city I go to. And I said, that's a great idea. He goes, I'm gonna have fun and I'm just gonna take it easy. And so I guess that's how it started. I mentioned to Russ, maybe this is probably our farewell tour. So yeah. Okay.
we sat together on the, and we had a chartered plane. So everybody had their own seats, and it was a beautiful plane that United had built for professional teams in LA, I think. And we used it. And so I'd sit down with Bodgy, and occasionally I'd bring a little six pack for the ride for us.
Sure.
And we would pull out our itinerary, and I would go through the cities, and I would say, Bodgy, he was game for anything. It was just left up to me. So I would just go, okay, we're going here, we're going there. Oh, this restaurant, we've got to eat at this place. And so that's what we did every road trip. And Bodgy and I played hard every game. We worked our butts off, but we had a lot of fun. And one of the most memorable, I've told the story before, but Bodgy, most memorable night that we had was in Chicago at the steakhouse. That
quiet little town.
Gibson's Steakhouse. And we went with, remember, Steve Duchesne? We went with him. And
we ruined him.
Oh, we ruined him. He wanted to hang with us, and he couldn't. And Steve was, Luke Robitaille used to talk to Steve and go, you can't hang with those guys. What are you trying to do? You can't hang with those guys.
I knew that was your favorite story.
You got to elaborate, Rusty. Yeah. What do you mean?
Gibson Steakhouse, and we're eating, a very nice place in Chicago, one of the top steakhouses in Chicago. And I see this piano player playing there at the bar. I say, Russ, we're singing there later after dinner.
Yeah.
He goes, what? Yeah, we're going to go over there and sing with the piano guy. Oh, okay. Sounds good. So we finished dinner. And I say to the guys, nobody's listening to the guy, right? He's sitting there playing. He's just background music. And I said, you know, Piano Man? He goes, yep.
I go, piano player?
That's good. Piano player, piano man. You think you would? Yes. So he starts going, and I said, it's 9 o'clock on a Saturday. I start singing.
You can sing, man. You can sing.
And I said, there's an old man sitting next to me making love to his tonic engine. Everybody's looking around. What's going on? I said, Russ, you're the backup guy. All you got to do is la, da, 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 da. And then people are looking around. It's a pretty nice bar, right? Everybody's going, what's going on over there? Soon we had the whole bar was around the piano.
Oh, my God.
All singing. And it was, I told him we were going to sing there. So
and the, and the, remember the tip jar? This guy had the biggest tip jar in the world, and he had a 10 spotter, $5 bill in it. And Baji put in 20 bucks or something and said, can you play piano, man? By the end of the night, when they're kicking us out, the tip jar is overflowing. And this little guy, he must have been 80 years old. And he was all, remember, Baji, he was all hunched over. He didn't even look up. And by the end, he was standing up, banging the keys, going, are you guys coming back tomorrow? Tip jar was full and people were singing. It was such a fun night. Oh, my God.
That was a good one. That was a good
piano player's dream come true. A bunch of drunk hockey players with a per diem. That's lovely. Yeah, that'll work. Though, what are you doing now, Doug? What takes up all your time?
I was coaching in Victoria in the Western League last year, but not this year. They cut everything back. So I'm just hanging out right now.
Attaboy. Living in Victoria?
I'm just in a little bit farther north in the Couch and Rally.
Oh, yeah, sure. Good golf course there.
He doesn't want to give his whereabouts because all the autograph guys will be hanging out in front of his house.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the Seekers.
We got 3 acres, so we can fit them all here. So. There you go. No.
Barely. Yeah, barely fit them all. What do you remember, Doug, about those days? I mean, I'm old, like you guys, too, and my kids are in their 20s, and to try and explain to them what it was like in the 80s with Mario around and Gretz, arguably, right, the best players ever. And it was just, I lived in Edmonton during those times in the 80s, so I got to see it. But to explain to my kids now, you have no idea how freaking good these guys were. And guys always talk about playing with them. Talk about that. Suiting up with Mario. What about that first day when knowing what this guy was going to be all about? And
it was pretty good because in training camp, he did not skate a lick. He was just cruised around, and I could hear the veteran guys talking, right? And I'm taking this all in, right? They're going, look at our first rounder. He's horrible. He can't do anything.
Oh, no.
He's the laziest guy out here. He doesn't even skate hard. So, went to Boston our first game, and first shift, he gets the puck, goes around Ray Bourque, beats Pete Peters, scores, and the guys are going, oh, he's going to be okay.
What kind of guy is he? I've met Mario a couple times, and I've had nothing but great experience. I've got nothing but great things to say, but you're around him a lot. What was he like?
Super good guy. He kind of faked the French thing a bit. Like, I don't understand. He really did. He goes, I don't understand. I speak French, but he knew what was going on, but he didn't like the press that much. They were making a fuss over him. He didn't like that, but super good guy. Good team guy, anything for you. What do you need? Kept to himself a lot that first couple of years. Didn't really, hang with the guys, just wanted to focus on playing and on the bus, fun guy, got some laughs and talk about junior hockey and hockey, where's it going? And he's just a great teammate. And, I got a lot of points in Pittsburgh. You just go, hey, he goes, give me the puck. I go, okay, take it. Yeah, assist.
How about Mario? He got the hockey team for 32 or 33 million because he deferred his salary and they owed him that. He was the largest creditor. And he just sold. They just sold for $900 million. I mean, what a great story. I mean, he could have walked away, but he stood there and he got sunk his teeth into it, took over the ownership and created this incredible team and had to come back out of retirement. People forget that. Yeah. He came out of retirement to play to earn some money because all his deferred money was he wasn't getting it.
Right. And you know what? The team was going to Hamilton then. So he blocked that. That's where they were headed.
I didn't know that.
They were going to Hamilton. He said, no, I'll get a group together. We're keeping it here. And that's how he started.
Wow. Well, the Leafs might have blocked it too.
Yeah.
back in those days.
You're speaking of those Edmonton guys. I never forget going into that first practice in Edmonton, and it was pregame skate. And watching those guys, and we're just going, oh my God, we're going to get killed. Because they were hooting and hollering. They had no helmets on. They were just abusing Grant Fuhr in the net. He wasn't stopping anything. And we're just going, uh-oh. Yeah. That's how good they were.
They were so good. They were so good.
I want to hear about a little more trouble that you guys got. I love the story about the bar in Chicago. Okay.
Okay.
Who had to cover for who missing practice?
No, we never missed a practice. Are you kidding me?
We're the first guys there. Because we never went to bed.
Well, Baji, you tell a story and I'll tell one that I've got. Okay. They might be the same story, but it might be.
Yeah. Okay. So we're at another steakhouse. Oh, my
God. Of course.
Capital Grill in Washington. Mm. So I get this. I don't know why I get this idea. I get this swizzle stick.
Oh.
And I start going around measuring belly buttons. What are you doing? What are you doing? We're measuring you for body shots later on your bar.
Oh, beautiful. Yeah. Like so, anybody's belly.
Yeah. There's, you know, the girls are lifting up their shirts. Measure me.
Because the stir stick had a little round thing on the, and it was about the size of a dime. So Baji's going, let me see your belly button, see if it fits. No. And they're like, what? Why would I do that? Well, we're just deciding who we're going to do body shots off of.
Oh, there we go. If you were my teammate and you could get any cheese, as we like to call them, to lift up their shirt and let you measure their belly button, pal. Okay. Sign that Bodger. Okay. We really need that guy.
I don't know where that went, but I don't know how I came up with it, but it was pretty funny. And then after a while, I think remember that rest of one guy goes, hey, what's going on here?
The mayor of frickin' Boston. The mayor of Boston. Yeah, there was a mayor's convention going on in Washington, and these 40 mayors are in there in the restaurant. And this guy, big fat guy from Boston, comes over and goes, oh, how about I get involved in this? And everybody's like, no, thanks. Your belly button's the size of a grapefruit.
To the mayor.
Yeah. No, you don't qualify.
Yeah, you're
somebody,
not getting the
somebody could drown in that thing.
Yeah, you're not getting the picture, your worship. Yeah, we're not sure.
Yeah, that was part of the farewell tour. Yeah.
Well, the guys must have followed you around, Rusty. You guys.
Oh,
like the rookies and stuff. They must have
With that era, the late 90s is when the protein shakes and guys weren't, it wasn't like the 80s and early mid 90s where players were really having a lot of fun. And Gretz blamed it on Paul Kariya, because Paul Kariya came in and he was super fit. He did not drink. And every manager was now leaning towards drafting players that were like that. Agents were talking to players and really the fitness level and the clean living really, you know, kind of started right around there. So they would look at us like we were fucking crazy.
Ruined it for you.
They looked at it like they're crazy. Like when Baji and I first started, guys drank coffee, smoked cigarettes, and drank in the dressing room, and then drank beer in the dressing room after the game. When Baji and I left the farewell tour, you couldn't hear one another because of all the protein shakes, the blenders. It was just one blender after another. I'm like, Baji. And he'd just shake his head and go, oh, I know.
And they were terrible.
Oh, yeah. They tasted like chalk.
Our team was terrible.
But the one story I have, we had a team party at Harry O's in Manhattan. And I think it was the end of the year party, Baji, or was it Christmas party when I stayed overnight at your house?
Yeah, no, it was a year end party because we were out of it.
So we're out of the playoffs. Everybody's getting shit faced. We're at Harry O's and we didn't have Uber back then. I lived in Hidden Hills. So I said, Baji, can I stay at your house? He goes, yeah. I'll leave the back door open if I go home early and here's my address. So I leave Harry O's, go back to his house and get a cab over there. It wasn't very far, like 5-10 minutes. And I go around back, the fucking door's locked. And I'm like, oh my God. So I start looking.
Don't blame you, Doug.
I start looking at the lawn furniture. It's cold out. I take the cover off the barbecue. I'm trying to like keep myself warm with that. So I'm trying to get comfortable in a chair. And I'm just going to wait there till they wake up and I'm freezing cold. I look at the door again and there's a doggy door. So I get down on my hands and knees and I'm crawling through the dog door and Tracy, is in her nightgown walking into the kitchen going, good morning, Russ.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
I'm halfway through the door.
You're not doing that today, Rusty. Okay, you were, yeah, you're a little smaller back then.
Yeah, Russ is here. So then I made the kids pancakes, sent them to school, give Russ some pancakes, and he went home.
Yeah, that was it. Oh, my God. But we had so much fun. I mean, for a team that we weren't good, we unfortunately didn't make the playoffs. My first year there, we made the playoffs. Second year, we didn't make the playoffs, and then that was it. But it was fun playing with Baji. There was four guys on that team that year that all played in their 1,000th game, which was a huge deal. So it was Baji, myself, Ray Ferraro, and Gary Galley. And
Gabby.
But, you know, when a guy plays 1,000 game, the team chips in and buys them gifts. So fucking every 2 weeks, for 2 months, the players were all having to chip in from 500 to $1,000 each. And I remember Ian LaPerriere going, fuck me, when's this going to end? I'm sick of giving you guys all this money.
Because the four or five of y'all got to 1,000 games.
Yeah,
four. Same year.
Yeah, we all have a great picture of the four of us.
Yeah, I got it somewhere here.
And it was funny.
Let's see it. Get the picture. Yeah, get the picture. Let's go. Get the photo.
This is like show and tell. So we did this picture on purpose because remember in the really old days, that's how those guys took their pictures with their hands way down the shaft.
Right.
In the old, like black and white pictures. So that's why we took that picture because we're old guys. And
there's you and Doug.
Ray Ferraro and Gary Galley.
Oh, the two, the broadcast guys now.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Cool, man.
Yeah.
And let me know if you guys want any other pictures.
Yeah.
No, show them the bottle of wine.
Let's see the bottle of wine. What's the bottle of wine all about?
Courtnell's Collection. That's probably the last one.
Oh, yeah.
Wait a minute here. What do you mean Courtnell's Collection?
You guys don't save wine. I know you.
No. You guys. Are you kidding me? Yeah.
Yeah. So I kept that 1996. It says,
yeah, Sherwood Country Club. I was hanging out with a couple guys and we're in the wine business. So they said, hey, do you want to buy a barrel or something like that? And I'm like, yeah. Why not? I didn't even ask how many fucking cases it was. Yeah. And then I get this phone call and they said, hey, your wine's ready. What kind of label do you want on it? And I go, I walked into my wine cellar and I saw something collection. I went, Courtnell's Collection. So I go, Courtnell's Collection. And then the frickin' truck shows up with all these cases of wine. It was like, I couldn't believe how many cases of wine I had. And the guy sent me the bill and I thought I was getting like two cases. I think I got like 24 cases or something. So I was handing those things out like Tic Tacs. Yeah. Like I was just... Everybody who came to my house, I'm like, here, take two, take four, take six.
The reason, Doug, those fires that were in California, the reason they spread so far is because Russ was breathing on them. After he got his truckloads full of wine.
After his barrel, he drank.
When you look back at your career, Dougie. I got you, Dougie now. Okay, yeah. We've never met before. I can go with Dougie.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Next step's Baji, but you're not there yet.
There's always talk about guys when they go from junior or college hockey and they step on the ice in the NHL. And it seems every guy I ever talked to about it, you know, they have a different take on what the big moment was or what the big difference was. Some guys hilarious how they got the shit kicked out of them and realizing it was just like not even the same game. Can you talk about that back in your day? Because the reason I bring it up is because you were touted as one of the best junior players of your time as a defenseman. And then off you went to have to perform with Mario.
Yeah.
What was it like? What do you remember from those days?
I definitely put up some pretty good numbers. And, you know, I don't know how it happened, but it just happened. But it was really weird. It just kind of fell in my lap right away. And we went, We had the Memorial Cup in Kitchener that year, 84, and Detroit wanted to meet with me.
Right.
So my dad was there. We drove down, took us to a ball game, and Jimmy Devolano was the GM back then. And he has, you know, Jimmy Devolano, we're 90% sure we're going to take right. you. So we're a red tie to the draft. So, okay, that sounds good. I figure I'm going to Detroit. So.
Jeez.
So here I am at the draft in Montreal. I got this red tie on, and Detroit selects Sean Burr. I went, uh-oh.
Oh, no.
Now what? Well, actually, Peter Sobota got thrown in there because nobody knew who he was, and they were hiding him in Montreal in the basement, I think, and
yeah.
brought him up. And so that draft order just changes after that. So then it goes down to Montreal. I figure, well, they didn't work out good with Doug Wickenheiser and a couple of other Western League guys, so they ain't taking a Western guy. So they take Shane Corson, and then it's go, oh, Pittsburgh and Vancouver. I go, whoa, wow. And Bill LaForge, my junior coach, is actually coaching Vancouver. So one pick away there, and then it ended up being Pittsburgh. But, and you know, it was all good because I kind of just slid in there. They're all talking about Mario, and I just kind of went in and played, and nobody really knew I was there. But Bob Berry calls me in his office after training camp, and he says, get in here, I got to talk to you. Okay, I figured maybe I'm going back to junior or something. He goes, well, kid, we like you. We're keeping you because we got nobody else.
Heartwarming. Oh, boy, isn't that nice?
So I was going, yes. And I went, oh, hang on a second. So that was my first break into the league is you're sticking because we got nobody else.
And you knew you weren't going to win Rookie of the Year with Mario yeah, on your team.
Yeah, for sure. I said, okay, that's fine. I can hang out here for a while.
Who were your I think you made your way through six different teams. Who's your favorite team? Who's your favorite? I mean, Mario might be the obvious, when you look back at those, who's the most memorable team or coach? We like to talk to you about coaches.
I love Pittsburgh. It was great. I was not happy to leave there, but then I'm going to Buffalo and it's cold. We're from the West Coast. It's not, it's not a very outdoorsy place,
that's not for the
94. We had a great team, LaFontaine, McGillney, Andrewchuk, Howardchuk, Hassan, sure. We had some great players. We had a great team and we got beat out by Montreal that one year.
Isn't that the year they went on to win the cup?
So it's the year they won the cup. Yeah. So we lost McGillney. He broke his ankle. So that wasn't good. But John Mockler was there. Great coach. One of my favorites. Hey, be creative. Get over the blue line. Do what you do. I can't tell you what to do. You have to be creative. Wow. I don't like to dump it in. Hang on to the puck. Keep it. I'm going, this is great. We love it. And that small old odd building we had couldn't really move around very much. But he was one of my favorites. I really like Larry Robinson. We were in L.A. We weren't very good. But Larry, I always watched Larry play. And I thought he was a great player and kind of a guy I idolized a bit. So it was pretty cool to play with him and for him. So he was a funny story about Larry is – We're in St. Louis.
He never caught us out past curfew. That's funny.
He wanted to know where you were. Right. Yeah.
And we're in St. Louis and I'm backing up and I fall down over the blue line. They go in and score and I get back to the bench and he's laughing at me. He's going, that was a great one. You went flying right over your ass. You tripped over the blue line. And I go, he's going to give it to me. He's laughing at me. He goes, that was hilarious. That was pretty funny. So.
Oh man. How about you like Lemaire in New Jersey? Oh,
Jock, yeah. I learned so much from Jock Lemaire about defensive positioning and stick on the ice. And I've been teaching that to kids here for about 4 years here now, and they're looking at me like, are you crazy? Like you're supposed to sprawl and go down. And Jock's no, stay on your feet, play the puck, play the pass. And of course you had Martin Brodeur back there, so you just had to be in the right spot. So when they dump it in, Marty just dumps it back out. I never think I ever touched the puck in about 10 games.
But didn't you say that Jock taught you just stay in front of the net? They got to come here eventually.
Yeah. He says, I had Daryl Sutter in San Jose before that. And Daryl's running around, hit guys, work, kill. And then I go to New Jersey and Jock goes, I really love your play, but you're too aggressive. I went, Chuck, nobody's ever told me I was too aggressive ever. Come on. He goes, just stay in front. Play the pass. Play the pass. And it was so easy. And I go, where the hell you been for 12 years? You doing it wrong. And I learned so much from him. He was just such a smart guy and just in his defensive play and stick position. And it was, learned quite a bit from him.
Do you know he was the one that what allowed players to drink in the hotel? Because all the NHL...
Which coach was? Who are you talking about now?
Jacques Lemaire.
Yeah.
So Jacques Lemaire, when he became a coach, he changed one rule. He said he always wanted to have a couple beers. He didn't want to go out and leave the hotel. And it pissed him off that he couldn't go downstairs and have a couple in the hotel lobby bar. So when he became a coach in Montreal, he changed that rule. And so all the teams I played on, we weren't allowed to drink in the hotel. And I get to Montreal and they're like, yeah, let's meet in the lobby bar. I'm like, we're allowed to drink in the lobby bar. And they said, yeah, Jacques Lemaire changed the rule. And so we'd all meet down there for two beers. So you'd meet for two beers and then everybody would plan on where they'd go for dinner that night. Guys want sushi, Italian, steak, whatever. And then we'd all scatter and go in groups. All the other teams, they weren't allowed to do that. That's why you'd see like two guys go here and three guys go that way. Cause they couldn't meet in the hotel. And anyway, Jacques Lemaire was the one who changed that rule. Couldn't go in the bar after a loss. That was the only thing. After a loss, we weren't allowed in the hotel bar.
Yeah, and you never broke that rule.
How do you do that? Lie under a fucking couch?
Why are you yelling at me? See what I put up with, Doug? He yells at me all the time, okay? I'm just...
Well, because you make a comment that's not true. You can't break rules. You have to be at the bus on time or it leaves. The only rule that we got away with was curfew because...
There you go. There's a rule you broke. Okay.
Larry had a sleeping problem, so he'd take sleeping pills and go to bed before curfew.
Doug Gilmore always taught me, don't go right close to curfew. If you're going to miss it, you got to miss it by a long shot.
Yeah. Go deep. Go deep. You're coaching now, Doug, and you got coached. You know, those were great stories you told about great coaches. It's really cool to hear, you know, players who played for as long as you did and were so successful. What are kids now like to coach, Doug, compared to what you were like?
Good question.
Wow. Yeah, good question. It's different. Wow. They don't watch anymore. They don't study the game like we did. They think they do because they see a lot of video and they have to see the video. It's crazy. Like, kids come up, can I watch my shifts last game? I go, no, go home. biggest thing, what I notice sometimes is they get scored on and they come back to the bench and their heads are down. And I go, what are you doing? Get back out there. It's 1-0.
Yeah.
Right. And so we got 40 minutes to go. Like, oh, I screwed that up. I'm going to the bench. They're going to, you know, I'm taking me off. But one thing I always, this is what I played. I knew I made a mistake. So I didn't need to hear it twice from the guy behind me. So I really try to avoid that at that time. You know, by the end, maybe in between periods, I go, hey, listen, you can't do that. But at that moment, mentally, that's where they're really tough right now. They're very fragile, very unconfident, and just don't study the game like we used to. Like, study the players or it's all about what the next team is doing, what not I'm doing. Like, we always said, I don't care who we're playing, they can't stop me. Right. Like, there's no way.
I am really surprised to hear you say that using the word unconfident. I would think I got kids. They're good kids, but they're certainly more self-entitled than I was, with the choices they have. And, you know, yeah. I had to serve different meals to my kids going, when did this all fucking start that I can, you know, with the choices. Yeah. I would thought it'd been the other way around that Russ has spoken about kind of their egos getting in the way and they all think they should be on the first line. And that's what Russ always said was one of the difficult things to explain to kids and their parents. But you say the opposite, that they're not confident enough.
Yeah, it's very weird. And they always say, me and Dave Lowry had this discussion. I was coaching with him down there. The kid goes, I have no confidence. I go, I can't give it to you. Yeah. You have to get it. You have to earn it. What do you want me here? Here's a bunch of confidence. Here, now you're back.
Stuff that in your pocket.
Oh, thank you. I'm great now. I don't know what they're score. But they don't know how to work through that. I go, you know, even today, the guys are in Vancouver here. They're screaming. The guys aren't confident. I go, how do you get confident? You got to work out of it. You got to keep it simple. So that's a big thing for me here. Just they don't seem to be as confident and don't seem to study the game. It's very, very, very weird. It's a different time, I guess. It's what it is. A lot of video. Holy, I never worked so much on a computer. I tracked every face off, every guy's hand. It didn't help. But
when Bodgy and I played before a game, you'd have the penalty kill meeting. You'd watch maybe 5 to 7 minutes of tape on their team.
Right.
And then they'd call the power play in, and the power play would watch a video. Their, you know, our power play and their PK, so how the other team penalty killed. And then we'd have a team meeting, and we'd have another, you know, here they'd break down, like, this is where they like to dump it. This is how their D play. A few highlight videos, and that was it. And all that took about 15 minutes. And now, oh my God, it's
hours.
Everybody's like, all the guys that I know that coach are like, you, Russ, it'd drive you crazy. Like the amount of video that we watch and they want to watch, and the coaches got to think they got to stay at the rink forever because, you know, they got to show the GM they're working really hard. And like Rick Tockett said, it was an absolute joke.
Yeah.
Right. It's crazy. Because you've always said, Russ, you know, there's always this question to ask when you're talking to a star, superstar, star player like you were, Doug, you know, about, and it drives Russ around the fucking bed, Doug. That's why I like to ask it. And they all go like this. Listen, Doug, if you were playing in the game today, how would it go for you? Or if those kids that are playing today played back when you did, and Russ goes, the good guys would be really good and the bad guys would still be really bad. But that being said, talk about it now. They got fitness. You guys talked about, you know, the hilarious story about hearing the sound of the mix master making protein shakes, looking around going, the fuck is this? Where's the beer? And dietitians and, you know, ride the bikes and physiotherapy and all this stuff. They didn't do that back in your day. And do you think it makes a big difference today?
Oh, do I think it makes a big difference today? I think it does.
Totally serious, you know?
Yeah, it does. I think we had to figure it out for ourselves. And coaches now are trying to figure it out for them. Can you figure it out? Oh, what do I have to do here? I go, well, figure it out. Like, there's a face-off, and I'm going, what do we want us to do? I go, get it out. It's math. You got five guys. There's three go there, two go there. You go the other way. It's not that difficult. They really try to make it difficult, and it's not. It's simple. It's just about reading situations and reading plays. When I was coaching here, there's a bunch of young kids and they're here. And there's one kid in Seattle. His name was Barzell. He just took the puck and just went, okay, boys, try to get it from me. And he went around. I go, oh, wow. Okay. That kid's a pro. He's just above everybody else. And it's so much. There's two or three guys that are at that high level and the rest are just down here, and they might get a cup of coffee. They might get in there and get their shot. And I'm hoping they can, but got these kids going, hey, what do I got to do to make the National Hockey League? And I'm going, I really want to be honest with them, but I don't want to break the kid's heart.
Yeah.
Just keep working hard. Just keep working hard, but you really got no chance.
Right. You know, Jimmy, what we've done as a society to our children, we've taken away everything. Like when we were kids, we had paper routes. We'd go collect pop cans and get money, and we could walk to the corner store, buy something, get change. We'd walk to school on our own. We'd ride our bikes on our own. We'd be all over the place. Now, kids, they're driven to school, picked up. Mm-hmm. They get everything. They can order shit on their phones, or they don't have to do anything. They can't have a job because, oh, you're worried about this or that. Mm-hmm. And where I'm going with this is you, how about this? You get your kid their driver's license. You give them your car and they don't know how to fucking go to school or to practice, because we've driven them there and they can't figure out how to get there because they don't look out the window. They're in their phones, they're in this, right, or in that. And they're in this world of everything around them is taken care of and they can't figure shit out on their own until they are forced to. And that's why I think that these hockey players are they struggle because they've just had everything, you know, it's just like we've protected our children to the point where we've taken away a lot of independence from them. And then they got to get out on their own and they got to do this and they got to do that and they got to figure shit out. And sometimes it's too late.
Can't do it.
Yeah. It's too late. Like, fuck, some guys at the door just delivered a bunch of food for our house. There you go. Perfect fucking example.
Should have sent your kid to get it. They should be cooking around there, for God's sake.
The UPS driver, I'm driving down the freaking street in our little community in Westlake, and he's waving to me. I saw him at Costco yesterday. Hey, Russ, how's it going? He's got a mask on. He pulls it down. He goes, I'm your UPS driver. I go, I know who you are. Yeah. Like,
well, that's because the guy's delivering 7 flats of beer there every 4 days.
I go buy my own.
Cases of wine.
Yeah, barrels of wine.
That's true. The wine does get delivered.
There we go. Yeah.
But I think that's an example of, you know, my life anyways, with my kids living in LA, get their driver's license. And then they're like, how do I get to school? Which way should I go? Right. Fuck, I've just driven you there for 3.5 years. You don't know which way should I go?
Pay attention.
Yeah, I went through with my kid the other day. It's the same thing. He was had an eye appointment. He got the laser stuff done, right? And it's downtown. And he'd been down there a couple of times for consultations. And I said, okay, so he needs me to, you know, he can't drive home. He's getting this LASIK surgery done. I could pick him up in the morning. I said, okay, where is it? He's like, where's, I don't know. You know, so no problem. GPS, Siri, here we come. You know, what do you say to all that, Doug, when you hear Russ talk about that?
Oh, he's right. It's bang on. I think it's like we were 16. You had you got your learner's license. 2 weeks later, you had your driver's license.
Right. Yeah, yeah. 14. Yeah.
Now they can't get them until they're 18, 19. And why are they so far behind? We were driving at 16 years old on our own with 5 kids in the back. I was getting ready to practice.
Well, they got a nanny to do it now.
Exactly.
Oh, God.
Okay, before we let you go, and this was great, by the way, fantastic. Russ says you don't choose to retire, you get retired. But did you, when you, the time came near the end for you, Doug, did you find it tough to retire? Did you find that? I mean, that's a pretty big day when a guy has to look up and go, fuck, the music's winding down here. Yeah. Talk about that, Doug. Did you find it difficult? Did you enjoy it right away? Or what was your whole deal back then?
It wasn't difficult for me. I see guys all getting all upset and emotional. I go, what are you crying about? It's great. You're in the league. I never thought I'd ever get there. Two, I never thought I'd ever play 15 years. So at the end, I was like, wow, you see what I just did? Like, but I can't do that. I probably could have kept going, but when you lose it in your heart, like I was driving in LA going, it's a beautiful sunny day. And I go, I really don't feel like playing tonight.
Right.
Once that sits in, you're done. You can't get that back.
Yeah.
You can't get that back. And it was in Vancouver and I was just like, you know what? It's it. It's it. It's over. It was great. I had a great run. We had farewell tour and met a lot of great guys, but it's time to move on.
Tell the Montreal story when the coach and you were in the same bar restaurant in Montreal.
That was the end of it.
this
went around the league quite a bit. I don't know how, but anyways.
So I can keep a secret. It's just everyone I tell who can't.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So we're in Montreal exhibition game in Montreal. Playing the Vancouver. Mark Crawford's coach. I take the guys to what's Old Town Montreal, big restaurant there. Russ
Moishe's.
Wenanote.
That sounds right.
Anyway, it was a really nice one down in Old Town Montreal. I said, you guys got to come here. It's a really good spot. So a bunch of guys come there: Jovo, Bertuzzi, Billy McCault, Brendan Morrison. They're all there having dinner, and all of a sudden Crawford walks in the bar. I go, oh, and everybody's panicking and going, oh, Christ, coach is here. Coach is here. We're having a few beers. I go, listen, the rule is if you're here first, the coach has to go. And if the coach is there first, you have to go. That's the rule. Oh, okay. We didn't know that. He's not leaving. They start panicking. They're all leaving. I go, you guys don't leave. Come on. He's got to leave. So Billy McCault hangs with me. So I say, okay, Billy, you're sticking with me. That's great. So we go up to the bar and have another beer. The waitress sends me over a Shirley Temple and a note. It says, go home now. And I go, oh, this is fine. We're having some fun now. So I said, here, send him a beer and tell him to put me on the power play. So next morning, I go down to the rink. Finally, we leave. Next morning, I go down to the rink and Crow says, Mess, we got a problem. Mess is our captain, Messi. And Crow goes, oh, Christ, what did Brashear do now?
Of course.
He says, no, I got a problem with Bodger. I got an issue here. Says, okay, what's the problem? So he calls me in his office. He goes, I told you to go home. Oh, I thought we were having fun. Like, it was back and forth. You know, he said, no, I said, you went back. It was kind of funny, right? I was serious. You're fine. I said, what? Yeah, you're fine. I told you to go home. That's not, I'm going to address the team on this. I go, you're kidding me. Really?
Oh, no.
So he addressed the team on it and said, hey, we had an incident last night. I told him to go home. He leaves the room and goes, what the hell did you do? I said, I sent him a note. Don't put me on the power play. And they were laughing. They were going, oh, my God, you did that? I go, yeah, probably going to get sent to the minors, but whatever.
Oh, my God. How good is that? That is fucking awesome. God, I wish I had the balls to do that.
It was the end of the end, so I knew it was coming, so it didn't matter.
So then tell the story when, wasn't it Berkey called you in the office at right before Christmas?
Yeah. He called me in a couple times. Yeah.
But wasn't this the end?
Yeah.
Christmas, yeah.
Okay. So after that, it was, we went to Denver. From there, and Crow skated me down and back. I was doing double shift. I went down and back. Let's go down and back. I was just in Colorado. There's no air to breathe, so right. I'm just dead. He scratches me that game, and we were going first to eighth. That's how close it was. And Colorado beat us. They called up two rookies, and I'm pissed off. I'm Berkey. What's going on here? I can play against these guys. I don't know what's happening. We need to look at these guys. So I fly to Anaheim the next day. And he goes, Crow goes, you're in. I go, sorry, pulled my groin. You skated me too hard. Which really wasn't true, but I was trying to make my point. But I was just done with it. And I said, Berkey goes, you're going to the minors. I go, yeah, no thanks.
And that was it, right?
And you retired. That was it.
And wasn't that right before Christmas?
It was December, yeah, somewhere in December.
Yeah, because I heard that Crow wanted to send you to the minors right before Christmas.
And
Berkey, being Berkey, said, look, you don't want to go down to the minors over Christmas. You know, he's just being a dick. And what he's really telling you is you're done. And you said, yeah, I'm done.
Yeah.
And I think you retired.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, pretty much.
And Berkey was good. Berkey was awesome.
Berkey's honest. He's good.
He wasn't going to do that to you.
Yeah.
Was it always going to be hockey for you? We get to talk to Russ about this all the time, and it wasn't always going to be hockey, or if it wasn't, Rusty was going to be a cop. Talk about the irony of all ironies.
Yeah.
How about for you, Doug?
It was at 16, played in Kamloops. And I think at that time when I was successful, I had a story. We were at the cafeteria, and coach says, put down your goals and assists for the year. And I'm 16 years old, and I go, I'm going to get 10 goals and 30 assists, 40 points. And a guy named Jeff Fent was beside me. He goes, are you kidding me? Are you fucking stupid? And I go, what do you mean? He goes, is that wrong? I go, he goes, yeah, you're not going to get that many.
Should I change it?
Oh, okay. So I changed it to 5 goals and 15 assists. That's better. I ended up with 26 and 66. I tried to tell him, but he wouldn't listen.
Awesome.
So as a 16-year-old, now you're in the first round, and now it's hockey. Well, I could have a shot at this. So after that point, when I was successful in junior, it was, that was where it was going to be. So, and it was fun. I, it was fun. I just enjoyed it. I enjoyed playing. I had a great time out there. I was singing out there. I was, you know, going to have, you know, this was my spot. This is where I belong. So,
and Budgie is a singer. He kept singing that night.
I know. I heard him sing a couple of bars of piano, man. It was very good.
He ripped off about, what do you think, 30 songs that night? How long stayed till, I think, 2 o'clock. I think
somewhere
it was there. Yeah, something like that.
Nice. And Rusty loves singing, but he can't sing, right?
No, he can't sing.
He's my backup guy.
And I was banging the piano, like, you know.
One, two, three. I know that tune. Everyone knows that tune. Doug, what do you think of the game today? Do you watch a bunch of games?
Yeah, I do watch a lot. Yeah, it's refereeing is getting tough. Some of the calls, I'm going, really? Like, put a stick on a guy. And one that really bothers me is when they knock the guy's stick out of their hands. They used to do that when we were a rookie. Pat Boutette, I remember, come up to me and whacking me. And he goes, hang on to your fucking stick, rookie. I go, oh, okay, sorry. So I had to grip it tighter.
So hard.
I had to grip it tighter. So that's, don't lose your stick. That's, these guys, you know, they get a penalty for that. It bothers me. But it's exciting. There's some exciting players. David's great. McKinnon, you know, Draisaitl. There's some great players. That McCarr kid is fantastic. D-man.
Oh, yeah. He's such a stud.
Great to watch some of those guys come up. The game's so different. And you watch a 1986 game, and there's guys hooking, you guys riding, water skiing. That's a penalty. Oh, that's a penalty now. Oh, that's a penalty. That's a penalty. We'd be blowing the whistle the whole time. So it's different, but it's fun to watch. I enjoy watching it. And, you know, just enjoy watching the talent coming up with some of these young kids. It's great.
Baji, you're a BC boy, and Vancouver just cleaned house. They fired everybody, and they've got an, you know, Stan Smeal's going to be the interim GM till they find a new one. And there's a couple really good guys out there, so hopefully they grab one of them. And they got Bruce Boudreau in, and Bruce is taking on the team. He's signed a short-term contract. He says, you know, let me do what I can do. And if you guys like me, keep me. And if not, find a new guy. Yeah. What do you think's going on in Vancouver? What do you, as an ex-player and a coach, what do you think what are they lacking? I mean, are you watching them play or not?
Yeah, for sure. Oh, it's mayhem here today. You should have heard the radio. They were going crazy. It was nuts, but I've never seen a coach and a GM on the same day. It's one or the other. So that's different, but I don't know. They're just not playing like a team. They look slow. They just look behind. They're making defensive mistakes. Their goaltending's fantastic.
Demko's been great.
He's been great. Pettersson's not scoring. Besser's not scoring. Hughes is struggling a bit. It's really hard. They got good players, but when Miller, I don't know if you guys saw when Miller came on TV, is everybody on the same page? And he went, hesitated. Something's up, and I don't know what it is. I like Greener, and no Greener, he's a great guy. Jim Benning's a fantastic guy, you know, and they've been trying so hard, but I don't know. They lost Newell Brown last year. Maybe that was the key because their penalty count was terrible.
Yeah.
And I think Newell Brown was in charge of that. So it might have been a guy that they really miss.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're going to make some changes here, and we obviously know what they've done, but you know, the new GM coming in is going to make a lot of changes. So
I was saying to somebody today, you know, when teams are struggling, the GM would come down and go, hey, listen, boys, you guys don't pick it up, you're out of here. You're gone.
Yeah.
And nowadays you can't do that because of salary cap issues.
Yeah. Right.
So they're not going to trade me. Just change the coach and the GM.
Yeah.
So that was a threat. When I remember GMs coming in the room, go, oh shit, I don't want to get traded. I better pick it up here. Yeah. I don't want to leave this team.
Russ, you know the owner.
Yeah.
Did you have any conversations with him? Does the owner make some of those calls in the end, or how did this all come down?
I'm free, by the way, if you're talking to him.
Yeah, we'll let you know. Yeah. Russ knows
it. Yeah, I've been involved in helping out. So yeah, it's been a busy couple weeks, and I like, you know, Travis. I really like Travis, and unfortunately, Jim Benning's a nice guy, but he did a shitty job, and it was time to go. And he took away some really good players and didn't replace them. And I felt bad for Travis. So, we'll see where their depth chart is with drafted players and all, in the future, but they just needed to make a change. And unfortunately a good coach had to go. So, I don't disagree with any of the moves, but it's time and the Canucks fans they wanted change, and the Aquilinis gave Jim every dollar that he could spend. And he put that product on the ice for his job. Somebody said he'd be your favorite uncle. Like, he's a really nice guy, but he didn't produce, and right. It was time. So,
yeah, it's too bad. Well, see where it goes from here.
Yeah, Doug, this is going to be quite the honor for you, because of all the shows we've done, the last 5 minutes is absolutely, hands down, single-handedly the most hockey we've ever talked about on the show ever.
Seriously.
About the Canucks. So, Doug Bodger has been our guest. Doug, fantastic having you on, man. Boy, I wish I knew you. I feel like, you know what? When I get guests, I walk away going, I want to go to all my friends and go, I met a new friend today. I'm telling you what, this guy's one of my best friends now. Doug, thanks a million for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's about time, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, we'll do it again. We'll do it.
We're drinking BC's finest, by the way. Yeah. Kokanee and White Claw. White Claw was started in Vancouver, BC. And
you're the poster boy now.
Yeah, and Kokanee is. Where is Kokanee? Where's the brewery for Kokanee?
Creston,
BC.
Yeah.
Wow.
No problem with that answer. Where's the brewery for?
Hey, Bodgy's wife loves, or at one point she really loved antiques, and she used to shop in Victoria. Tracy's her name, and she used to shop at Chintz in Victoria.
Sure, know that story. Yeah,
and it's a great store. And she'd come home with these, beautiful furnishings, and Bodgy's like, "How much was that?" And she goes, less than filling up your beer fridge. And he goes, got a good point there. Okay, that was
can't argue with that.
Didn't you buy an old Coke machine?
I had an old Coke machine, 1953 Coke machine, and the bottles were all tilted, and you put a nickel in, and you pull it out, and they go ching, 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 ching. It was really cool.
You still have it?
Yeah, it's not working. The fan broke on it, but I still have it.
Get her fixed. What you said Mario wouldn't take $200 a year. What was your contract?
I signed for ninth overall, 80, 90, 100, 110, 4 years, $75,000 signing bonus paid over five different segments.
And I was the year before, I was seventh overall, and I was 75, 85, 95, 105, and $100,000 signing bonus.
So pretty close.
Yeah.
So pretty close.
What would that makes me feel better, Bodgy.
Yeah. That's those guys' paychecks right now.
What would that be now?
Oh,
Rusty, what would, like, if
what's you, so the you're, minimum? What's first rounders, like 850 or 950?
880, I think. Yeah.
And then they get a couple million signing bonus or something?
Yeah, whatever they can get out of signing bonus.
Yeah. And then they get bonuses left the yin yang. Like a good player, if they play the entire year, their rookie year, they'll probably make about $3 million total, I think.
Yeah.
I think with all their bonuses.
Oh, I got another good Mario one for you. I just thought of.
Yeah.
We're in training camp. And we're together doing lifting weights. We have a strength coach.
What year is this?
84.
No. Oh, so rookie. So rookies.
We're two rookies, yeah. Okay. We have a strength coach. Nobody has a strength coach in 1984. Mm-mm. They hire this guy. Okay, we got to do bench press. I go, bench press? I've never done bench press before. So it's one. Go down there. One, two.
How much was the weight?
185.
Okay.
Oh, no.
So Mario says to me, he goes, how much is it? 185. He goes, put me down for zero. I didn't even try it.
Didn't he turn to the guy and say, I don't know how many goals you can score with this?
Yeah, probably he did. He goes, put me down for zero on this one. Not even trying it. Didn't even lift it.
Well, did you hear the story about Brett Hall when you had to raise your arms and jump up?
Oh,
raise your arms and jump up or something like that. Or
you're vertical or something.
And he goes, I raised my arms 76 times last year.
Oh, beautiful. Nice. Yeah, nice. Very good. This might be the longest we've ever gotten a show. I keep saying we're going to let you go, Doug. Okay. I keep saying that. We stopped down. We've done promos. We said, okay, fuck it. No, get erased that. We're going to go back. This is the longest we've ever gotten a show without asking a hockey player. You got to have a golf story. Every hockey player.
Here we go. Tell the Tiger story.
Real good golf story. I was into a promo up North Island with Tiger. And we ended up back in Comox and we're having a few beer. And I said, Tiger, you ever played neighborhood golf?
Oh, Tiger Williams. When you said golf and Tiger.
Not Tiger Woods, Tiger Williams. Yeah. So Tiger, have you ever played neighborhood golf? He goes, no, never. I said, what do you do? He goes, you go in the front lawn and you just tee it up down the neighborhood and see how many roofs you can hit.
No.
He goes, I love it. Let's do it.
No.
So we just get in the neighborhood and just start smacking balls down the neighborhood.
But didn't you guys go, didn't you play another time at his house in West Van, like up in the British properties?
No, I never went up there. He never invited me to the house.
Because you know what? Tiger told me this story.
Oh, yeah. He did it up at his house.
And so he lives up in the British properties, or he did in Vancouver, very wealthy. It's like the Beverly Hills of Vancouver. And he tells the story about neighborhood golf, and Doug Bodger taught me how to play this. And so they go out and it's pitch black out and they're playing from yard to yard.
Come on.
And he hits it. And it goes into somebody's gated home, and he climbs over the fence, and the lady comes up and says, Tiger, is that you? And he goes, yeah. What are you doing in our yard? He goes, I'm playing neighborhood golf. Well, play well. See you later.
I'll play well.
Real golf balls here. So you're using the wiffle balls.
Real golf balls, because some of them we never did find.
You know what? I'm going to do that.
Drunken golf. Well, you can't.
Yeah, we were silly back. Neighborhood golf.
Huggy Bodger, thanks a lot, man.
You got her. Thanks for having me.
Congratulations on a great career.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well done, man. Take it easy, Doug.
Thank you.
Thanks for being with us. Please be sure to subscribe to The Suspendables today and share the show with your friends and followers. And find out everything you need to know about the show on our brand new website, thesuspendables.com.